This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This is Comedy Week on Fresh Air, getting in a few last laughs before the summer season ends. We open today's show with Richard Belzer. He's done stand-up in the big and small comedy clubs around the country and wrote the book, How to Be a Stand-Up Comic. In the early days of Saturday Night Live, he warmed up the audiences before the broadcasts. He went on to perform on the late-night shows and has hosted his own comedy show and comedy specials. He's an actor as well as a comic. Belzer now plays Detective Munch on the TV series Homicide. Here's an excerpt of our 1987 interview.
You must be used to handling absolutely everything and anything. For 5 years in the mid-70s, you were the MC at Catch a Rising Star, comedy club. So you must have learned how to handle everything, including the craziest hecklers.
Yeah, well, when I first started, I didn't talk to the audience at all. I just introduced the acts. And then as time went on, I realized that I had to address the audience and asking people where they're from, what they're wearing, about who they're with. And it just kind of evolves. And sometimes you discover, sometimes I initiate it, and sometimes there are hecklers. So there are all different kinds of hecklers. Some people are very innocent. They just want to be a part of the show, and they think they're helping the comedian. Some people are mean-spirited drunks who want to disrupt the show. Some people are disruptive without even knowing it. I mean, it's just everything you could possibly imagine. Like relatives, I guess. It's a good analogy.
You said sometimes you would initiate it. How so?
Well, if I come out on stage, I don't usually like to start with prepared remarks. I usually just come out and say hello to the audience. And then if I see someone who looks interesting in the front row, a couple or a person, I'll ask them where they're from, and then I'll ask them what they do, and then I'll ask them all different kinds of questions to elicit responses, and then ad-lib and improvise off of the information they give me.
You've seen a lot of bad comics perform.
Yes.
What are some of the mistakes you've seen them made that you've learned from?
Well, a lot of them make the mistake that I made when I first started, and that's to rush your material when you're not getting a laugh, to speed it up. And that's the death knell. That's the worst thing you can do, is to speed up the material. What I used to do, my fatal flaw, was I would get mad at the audience for not laughing, not thinking it was me. So I would get hostile towards the audience for not laughing, and it just kind of built into this trap that I would put myself in and had to kind of verbally dance my way out of. But I soon realized that the thing to do is to take your time and not rush the material. I'd say that's the number one rule.
When you were angry at the audience for not laughing, what would you say to them?
I can't say it on the radio.
That bad.
But that period in my career didn't last too long, though. That was just like a few weeks when I first started. I realized what I was doing, because I would tape my act. A big thing with comedians when I started, I hope they're doing it now, is recording your act every night, and then you could listen back to it and see where you rushed and see where you got the laughs and see what works and what doesn't, and it's invaluable.
Well, let me ask you about your life and how you got into comedy. Now, I know you grew up in a housing project.
Yes.
And I've read that you didn't have a lot of money when you were growing up.
No.
And I assume that you were one of the funny kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Was that a kind of protective shield for you, being funny? Did that mean that you weren't going to be picked on by the toughest kids around?
Well, it's interesting. My wit has saved me more than once. And I found when I was a kid that the tough guys, a lot of the tough guys in the school, liked my wit. So I would hang around with some tough guys, and we would come across some other people, and I would, like, put them down, and they'd go to beat me up, and my friends would beat them up. So I never really had to get in any fights, really, because I would, like, kind of instigate a fight, and then Vinny or Rocco or Vito would do the rest.
Instigate through verbal
abuse?
Yeah,
I sound like a little fascist, don't I?
Yes,
but
that's
when I was a little, you know, I was young. It was 30 years ago. I was a young, skinny kid.
Now, you've said in one of your routines that when you were young, your mother used to beat you, and that you would try to tell her jokes to get her to stop.
Right, right. Well, she was the toughest audience I ever had.
Yeah.
And my kitchen was the toughest room I ever worked.
Well, how true is that, though?
Actually, it's quite literally true. It didn't work as much as legend has it. But I when I was a kid, I had a crew cut, or a zip, what they called then, very short hair, and I looked just like Jerry Lewis. And I used to do a Jerry Lewis impression. And sometimes my mother would get mad at me, and I'd do my Jerry Lewis shtick, and she'd laugh and forget to hit me. But I'd say that worked maybe 2 times out of 20. So she usually wound up hitting me anyway. So the material wasn't that strong.
You know, one of the many old cliches is that humor comes from pain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like it's actually kind of true in your life.
Literally and figuratively. But see, I subscribe to that theory to a point. I don't think that you can relegate a facility to be funny or any talent to a specific psychological situation. I think there has to be talent that is naturally intrinsic to the person. And then if there's a psychological situation that makes it come out. I mean, I don't think that every kid that was hit grew up to be a great boxer or a great comedian.
Yeah.
But I think there has to be something there, and the two work together.
I know exactly what you mean. Now, you've also said in your routines that you were thrown out of every school that you went to. Does that include college? Were you thrown
out of
college?
Yes, I was thrown out of college. It was funny because one of the reasons I was thrown out is because I led a demonstration in 1964, before there were Vietnam War demonstrations. This was like the wimpiest demonstration. We wanted to have women be able to visit the boys' dorms, or the boys visit the women's dorms, I forget. So I got all the guys in my dorm to, like, march over to the women's campus, you know, like clapping our hands, you know. And the security guard, his name was Joe, and we all knew him, he came over to the crowd, the mob, and he said, "All right, guys, come on, let's go, break it up." And we said, "Okay, Joe." And that was the demonstration. There was no bomb throwing. There was no Mario Savio. There was no...
For this, you got thrown out of college?
Well, that was on my record that, you know, I led a demonstration. I broke curfew. I had liquor in the dorm. Well, how bad can you be in 1964?
Right. Now, then you went into the Army.
Yes, and I was thrown out of the Army, too. Well, I was actually discharged under honorable conditions for being too funny to carry a gun. So, wait a minute, this guy's too funny. He's too funny, which is almost true. Actually, I got out of the Army by feigning mental illness, if you will. I pretended that I was suicidal, and I staged this whole thing where I said I got beat up and my back was hurting, and they found out I was faking, and they sent me to the Jewish chaplain in the Army. I didn't know there were Jewish chaplains. I thought Pat O'Brien was the... I didn't know Jews joined the Army. I didn't know Jews were, let alone chaplains. And I went to this rabbi, and I said, "Rabbi," because my sergeant said that you know, you got to go see your chaplain, Belzer, because you need help. So I went to the chaplain. I said, "Chaplain, with all due respect, I think I need to see a psychiatrist." And he said, "You know, Freud was a Jew, and the reason he became a psychiatrist was to discover his Jewishness. You don't need a psychiatrist. You need to discover why you're a Jew." And he lectured me on kosher food and choirs, and how I could sing to the Army Jewish choir and eat kosher food. And I said, "Really, Rabbi, I need to see a psychiatrist." He said, "You have to discuss. Do you have a girlfriend?" I said, "No." He said, "Did you ever have?" I said, "Yeah." "Was she Jewish?" "Good." Like, everything was revolved around Judaism, which was the farthest thing from my mind then. I just wanted to get out of the Army. Finally, I was allowed to go to the psychiatrist, and I, having had a little college, I knew every freshman psychology phobia. So I said that I wet the bed, I was suicidal, I hated my mother, I was afraid of women. I just did every cliche in psychology, and I got out.
That's amazing.
I hope no one's listening.
That's probably
from
one
the
of
Pentagon.
One of your most convincing performances.
Yeah, and I never do this on stage. Maybe I should tell them my Army story on stage.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. There's a lot more. I mean, it's a 40-minute story. I'm really brutally paraphrasing the story.
Did you ever think to yourself, what happens if I'm discovered that this is just an act?
What's that?
When you were trying to get out of the Army and faking
all
this stuff.
Well, I think that it's kind of like partially, you know, they knew that I was acting crazy, but I was crazy to do that in the first. It was kind of like that, you know. It was like,
right, if you could do this so well, who wants you around
exactly.
Anyways?
Exactly, it was like Kafka meets Catch 22 or something.
I think the very first time I saw you perform was on Saturday Night Live, and you were doing your impression of Bob Dylan in like a retirement center singing in a Yiddish accent.
Right, well, the 86-year-old Bob Dylan.
Yeah. Now, I hate to ask questions like,
sure,
how did that idea come to you? But really, how did that idea come to you?
Well, when I was a kid, I hate to say that Bob is that much older than me, but well, when I was a teenager and we started first getting into Bob Dylan, and we found out his real name is Zimmerman, and he's a Jew from Minnesota, and this was like a revelation to have a hero that's a Jew. So I said, if his name is Zimmerman, he must have had a bar mitzvah. So I fantasized what Bob Dylan's bar mitzvah must have been like, you know. Baruch atah Eloheinu melech olam, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah osav. And then when he gets older, you know, oi, oi, once upon a time, you dressed so fine, you threw the bums a dime in your prime, didn't you? People called Shady Bear Doll, you're bound to fall, you thought they was all kidding you. And so on.
Oh, who spoke Yiddish in your family?
Actually, I just got back into Yiddish music. I've discovered these things. Everyone in my family spoke Yiddish, but I resent the fact that they didn't share, they didn't teach me, they didn't teach my brother or my cousins. My parents would talk in Yiddish, my grandparents would talk in Yiddish, and there's a comedian who does a routine, I can't think of who it is, but where it's true, if I may borrow the routine without crediting the person. And that is that Jewish families had the habit, the adults would tell a joke. They'd be telling a joke in English, and then a kid would walk in the room, and then they'd do the punchline in Yiddish. They'd say, so the guy walks up to the maid, he opens the door, he sees that she has no clothes on, and then a kid walks in the room, and he goes, Achal v'shin v'chel v'cha! And you don't know what the punch... It was the most frustrating thing I've ever... I still resent my uncles to this day for doing that to me. And I wish I could remember the comedian that did that. Maybe it was Robert Klein, but... That's not my routine, but it's a true story.
You know, since it was the older people in your family who spoke Yiddish, did you think that when you grew up, you'd automatically know the language?
That's funny, because I have a theory that everyone, when they get old, no matter what religion they are, they have a Jewish accent. Even Irish people, they get to be past 65.
I want to go to the store now, because I'm in the store, good, because I can't, hello?
You know, everyone, Italians, everybody, they, for some reason, they get a Jewish accent.
Richard Belzer recorded in 1987. He plays Detective John Munch on Homicide.